Welcome to Unity of Fairfax, a positive path for spiritual living and spiritual center for education, practice, and service in Northern Virginia. We hope you find inspiration in this week's message.
I am reminded today of a favorite scripture of mine that has multiple renderings in the different interpretations and presentations of the Bible. It's from Matthew, from the Sermon on the Mount, and we do have a slide for this one today. And it says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" Now, in the King James Version, it reads slightly different. It says, "The light of the body is the eye. Therefore, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." So I was curious about why it is the word single or healthy was used. I mean, what was the root in the original Greek in which the scripture was written? And the word that's used there is haplous, which means, yeah, of course, single, whole as in complete, or simple, or good at fulfilling its office. So I was curious metaphysically what we might do with this. So I decided, in my own way of metaphysical interpretation, I would be a symbol for how do we see the world? What's our perspective? You know, it's one of these things. With what lenses are you looking at the world? And when we look at this word single or healthy, it raises in my mind the question, are we getting our information about the world from only one source? Or maybe is our source of information healthy? Are we getting our information from multiple sources? And how are we basing our evaluations and judgments and meaning-making on the information we have? Are we getting a good, rich sample set of information inputs when we make the decisions about how we see the world? Because here's a caution that we run into. If we're only using one source, or if we are only looking at one piece of information, we run the risk of creating an unhealthy perspective of how we see the world and our place in it. Let's hold that on the side for just a moment, and I want to have the next slide called, please. This is a little Facebook meme. See, there is good stuff on Facebook. I've been really inspired lately. I'm still on the hunt for the elusive kitten videos that I know are out there, so I know cute kitty videos are there. If you have one, please post it. But this was a posting from a minister in Evansville, Indiana, and I just want to read it. It says, "Dear everybody, since I've not pastored people through a pandemic before, I don't know all the answers, but I'm paying attention to science and praying for wisdom. Together we'll take courage, be patient, consider the least of these, and press onward while loving our neighbors. P.S. Wash your hands from your pastor." So when we made this decision, as Ron mentioned, to put a hold on in-person activities, we used multiple inputs. We used science and discernment to discern together what's the best way to care for everybody, to maintain public health, and to set us up to move through this period of time as quickly as possible. Multiple sets of input. Which leads me to a refrain I've been making quite a lot lately, and in fact, it is one of my mantras of my life, and that's this: how can what is before us be for us? Now, that's a tough question sometimes, and I'll give you an example of how I'm working my own program in this regard. We had announced that yesterday we would be holding a program with the Better Angels organization. Now, Better Angels is an organization whose mission is to reunite the reds and blues in our country in a working alliance to depolarize America. And I was really looking forward to it because I watch maybe a little too much news, and I was thinking, gosh, it sure would be super swell if we found a way to bring people together to work for the common good. And I thought to myself, yeah, this might be uncomfortable because we have people who have really strong opinions, and it might cause us to stretch if we have this conversation and do this work of uniting and coming together. And we might all be terribly inconvenienced as we bring people to work for the common good. And there might be economic impacts as we bring people to work for the common good. It's like, gosh, I really wanted an opportunity to bring people together to work for the common good. And I thought to myself, Russell, you need to be careful what you wish for. Because we have a wonderful opportunity to do all those things to bring people together to work for the common good. It's like, well, this is a little bit bigger than I had anticipated. And yet, I'm choosing to hold the vision that we can make this experience of coronavirus mean that we are working together for the common good. I've never, you know, I watched the newscasts. Okay, I've already said that twice now. So you see people in the big long lines, and I don't recall there being a conversation. Are you a red or a blue? It's like, no, we're just here to get our things and work together for the common good. In the decisions that all the faith communities have made, especially our area, we are all very much working together. Politics hasn't even come up. There's just this knowing and this understanding. We are here for each other in this challenging time. I think we can build on that. I don't think it's going to be easy or fun for the next however long we endear. Yeah, let's endear this to us. Let's send some love to coronavirus so it'll go away. You know, it's like that Abe Lincoln once said, you know, if you turn your friends into enemies, your enemies into friends, you won't have any enemies. Something like that. Let's do the same with this. Let's just love this thing away and love our neighbors. Yeah, so I thought of some other, so I thought to myself, what else? How are some other ways this experience might be for us? Well, this is my own personal list, because I was at home making lists. I love to like make lists so I can check them off. I'm one of those people. And so I thought, here's an advantage. If I'm going to be home more often of late, I can clean my house thoroughly. There are junk drawers in my kitchen I've been looking at for I don't know how long, thinking, you know, I probably don't need to block all that energy. Because think about it, when we teach prosperity, we always tell people, very first lesson, where is energy blocked in your life? Well, okay, here's a wonderful opportunity to unblock energy in my life. So I'm going to clean my house. I invite you all to do so as well. And maybe a thorough disinfecting clean. I have dogs. There's probably a few scary corners in my house. Just saying. I noticed the other day I came home from the church and I said, I just need to take a walk. And I took a mindful walk. The daffodils were beautiful. The forsythia was beautiful. The crocuses didn't have to fight the snow to come up this year. And they were beautiful. And I'm noticing the buds on the tree and they were beautiful. And I thought to myself, nature is reminding us of the resurrecting power of life. Russell, go take a look at that. Take your inspiration from that. So I encourage all of you, get outside and take a walk. Let nature speak to you and remind you that we are in this Lenten season for that very purpose, to remind us all of the resurrecting power of life. There's something within it. In church terms, we call it the Christ within, but it doesn't matter what you call it. There is a faculty of life that will not be stopped because we might be stressing over a health concern. Life goes on. Not only it goes on, it is beautiful. So go out, take a walk. That's what I'm doing. The other thing I thought about for myself and maybe for you had to do with technology. So here's the grace. We're live streaming today. We can all be together. We have social media platforms too numerous to count. So let's use them. And more importantly, and this is where I'm going with all this, let's learn how to use them. On our board of trustees, we use Google Docs. It is a source of prayer for many of us to learn how to use Google Docs. So guess what? This is a glorious time of leaning into and embracing this particular software. We have some other softwares we use here at the church, and I've been able to kind of skirt around and let somebody else handle it, like Airtable and some of the other ones. I have this wonderful opportunity to learn how to use technology. So, yay, technology. And technology is going to really be put to the test for our schools and all around so that we learn how to maximize this tool. There have been concerns made about, oh my goodness, we're going to lose contact with one another. Like, you don't have to lose contact with one another. We have more opportunities now than ever. This is a wake-up call for us to use them, to learn how to use them, to make peace with them. That's the larger issue. It is also, in like fashion, a call to us to become aware of how many children in our area rely on reduced or free lunches through school. So here is a real good awakening for social conscience to make sure that we find out as members of this community, Unity Fairfax, myself, and everyone watching, wherever you happen to be, to make sure the children in your area have food. It seems odd that in a prosperous country like ours, we have people who are food insufficient, but we do. So this is a wonderful opportunity for us to care for the least of these, to support them so that they have what they need to grow and to be who they've come here to be. I think we have a responsibility for that. So let's take it. Another way we can use this time is if you do find yourself waiting in line for something, instead of doing this, this is what I saw when I watched the news, people in line, you know, have their shopping cart and their phone. Do this. Put the phone away. Turn to the person on either side of you. And with true, genuine affection, ask, how you doing? Say hello. Connect. And if you have somebody in your life you know of who's not such a technical person, give them a call or knock on the door and just say, how you doing? Let's use this time as a reminder that not only technology connects us, but if we're going to find ourselves in line or with neighbors, to say hello, check on people, love one another. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about living the gospel message. No doubt there will be economic impacts of this experience across the board in a variety of ways. Let's just call it what it is. So rather than making this be against us, I encourage us all to look at very closely every single expenditure that we have. In recent weeks, I'd started doing this anyway because one of the things we're doing is we got a great rate on a refi on our house. So I am very excited about that. Yay! And in that process, I was looking at all the subscription services I have, the 4,000 channels on television and all the online radio and the XM radio and the satellite services and the movie channels and all this stuff. And I had to ask myself, am I really using all that? And I looked at all the other services and things I just have set up automatically, and something really magical happened. I called to cancel one of them, and instantly the friendly voice on the other line said, you've been such a good customer, we'd like to offer you a better rate. And I'm like, well, why didn't I call earlier? I still turned down the better rate because it wasn't anything I needed. So I thought to myself, this is a great teachable moment to tell us, to invite us all into that experience of make a deal. Find the best value for our resources. Because it's a way to use this experience for our good. And the most important thing, really, I think whenever we encounter something significant in our lives, and I would say this is a significant issue for us, to ask the question, what's really important to me in my life? I mean, this is Lent, so this is that time of contemplation anyway, so why don't we just maximize that? So what's really important in my life? And then the second part, which is every bit as important, and what am I doing about it? Now that's where the pedal hits the metal. But I think we can find ways to lean into this time and be blessed by it. So that's some of your homework for this week. What's important to me? How am I making it meaningful? And how else can I use this experience to be a blessing? And I realize that's a lot of work.
But hey, you got time, right? Let's do it. So for this Lenten season, I've been drawing my inspiration from the book Factfulness, 10 Reasons Why We're Wrong About the World by the late Hans Rosling. And I've been really inspired by this. And I had a quote from that I'd like to show on the screen on the next slide. He says, "Factfulness is recognizing that a single perspective can limit your imagination and remembering that it is better to look at problems from many angles to get a more accurate understanding and find practical solutions." I love that. Let's find practical solutions. And I think what I've just spelled out are some practical ways to find meaning in our current experience. But there were 5 tools that he really recommended that we all consider in order to find practical solutions to the challenges of our lives. And not only that, to find practical ways to eliminate negative thinking and negative thought patterns. Because one of the ways in which we get trapped in a negative thought pattern is we pick one perspective and say that's all there is, or we only get our source of information from one source. So just broadening those two things alone will help us to have a fuller and richer life. And so the first thing he says is test your ideas. It reminds me of when I was in high school and I was on the debate team, and there was one theme for the year's debate season, and we had to be able to argue both sides of the coin convincingly. That was a wonderful experience, I must say, because there were some of the topics that were there that I had, even in high school, strong opinion for, and I had to learn to think through the opposite point of view. It's like, whoa, that's work, but it's very helpful and healthy for us to be able to do so. It frees us from our attachments to my one right way. So he says, don't only collect examples that show how your excellent or favorite ideas, how excellent your favorite ideas are. Have people who disagree with you test your ideas and find their weaknesses. We sometimes call this the loyal opposition, or the people who will share candidly, here's another point of view, have you thought about X? So test your ideas, or be willing to have your ideas tested. That's the only way you'll know they succeed. This is why companies spend huge budgets on research and development. Because when a product goes to market, they want to know they've thought it through and it'll be successful. Second point he makes, it concerns limited experience. He says, don't claim expertise beyond your field and be humble about what you don't know. Some of us have that character defect of needing to be right. Probably nobody in this room, but you might know somebody. It reminds me of Proverbs 16:18. Arrogance goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Now, some of the translations say pride goes before a fall, and the word that's used for pride actually means arrogance. There's nothing wrong with being proud of your accomplishments. In fact, there's everything right about that. But arrogance is the issue. He also warns us to be cautious and mindful of the limits of the expertise of others. So how do we do this practically in our lives? Well, put it to you this way. This is why we get second opinions and why we get 3 quotes. We just want to make sure we've done our homework, our due diligence. It's like that in the personal issues we experience as well as the big picture items. The third issue is hammers and nails. He says, if you're good with a tool, if you found something that has worked for you in your life, chances are you'll want to use that on everything. You know that old saying, if all you have is a hammer, every problem becomes a nail. He reminds us in the text to make sure that we find friends and others, colleagues, who have screwdrivers and wrenches and tape measures, and to be open to ideas from other fields. Again, we don't want to get limited. Number 4, numbers, but not only numbers. He said, you can't understand the whole world without numbers. You've got to have numbers. As we say around here, data. You got to have data, especially if you want to make a data-driven decision. But you got to know the backstory as well. What else is going on? What else is contributing to making this number? And that's why we're being very mindful about our decisions related to the coronavirus, because we know there's a lot of data we don't know. So we're being mindful of what we know and being mindful of what we don't know. So let us love numbers for what they tell us, and let us be aware that there are many things they don't tell us. In other words, we consider quantitative data when making a decision, as well as qualitative data when making a decision. Number five, he says, be careful and be aware of simple ideas and simple solutions. These are his words, Hans Rosling. History is full of visionaries who use simple utopian visions to justify terrible actions. Welcome complexity. Combine ideas. Compromise. Solve problems on a case-by-case basis. So let's think about all these things, all these ideas. They're applicable when we're learning information about the coronavirus, when we're making a discernment about an investment or a job opportunity or decisions related to a health matter or a relationship matter. We just want to stay open and be mindful of where we might be engaging in a thought process that is leading us down a negative road. We'll get through all of this experience, I have no doubt. I have strong faith about that. If the history of humanity is any indicator, we'll move through this experience, and by working together, we'll move through it much faster than if we had not worked together. So I'm convinced we're doing right things in right ways. In closing, because I know I've given you a big homework assignment about being clear about what's important to you and what you're doing about it, I'd like to read a poem called For Equilibrium by the late Irish poet John O'Donohue. Beautiful poet, beautiful reading. It goes like this. Like the joy of the sea going home to shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. As the wind loves to call things to dance, may your gravity be lightened by grace. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. As water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. As silence smiles on the other side of what's said, may your sense of irony bring perspective. As time remains free of all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all that it names. May our prayer of listening deepen enough to hear in the depths the laughter of God. Peace be with you. And namaste.
Thank you for tuning into Unity of Fairfax podcast. You're welcome to join us live in Oakton, Virginia, every Sunday at 9 and 11 a.m., or view our live stream services from our website at unityoffairfax.org. We appreciate your donations to support this podcast to make our message of positive, practical spirituality more accessible to all. See you next time.